Welcome to Navigating Nourishment. We are your hosts. I'm Debbie.
And I'm Wendy, and we are National Board Certified Health and Wellness Coaches.
In each of our episodes, we're going to navigate through all the overwhelming and controversial information in the world of health, wellness, and well-being.
If you're tired of false promises and want honest answers and clarity, we invite you to step into curiosity, to explore new perspectives, and discover what works for your unique body and life.
We are health and wellness coaches, which is a pretty new career, I'd say. But what we do is we help people find better health, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do. So when Jackie told me about you, I was so excited because this is what we want our clients to, you know, to look forward. Yeah. We're always saying, "What? Think of your future self. Think of your future self." Because, you know, it's easy to be healthy when you're young, and we take so much for granted. But especially, we're both 54, and think we're starting to see things change in our bodies, and we're starting. Our peers are all starting to get these middle-aged illnesses and conditions and all this stuff. So we're saying, okay. That's not the road I want to go on. I want to be a really healthy older person as I get older and embrace aging as our brains get better. So,
and embracing aging, I think, is part of the conversation too, because I think we're an ageist society. We create too much hardship on aging. You know, we demonize it. We don't find value in our elders, and we want to change that story. So we're so happy to have you here.
And I'm happy to be here with such two beautiful ladies.
Thank you. Yeah, so our podcast is called Nourish Noshes. Mm-hmm. It used to be called Nourish Noshes.
We had it Nourish Noshes for about 5 years, but we recently realized that wasn't a very good name. People didn't really know what that meant. Yeah. So we have changed the name of our podcast to Navigating Nourishment. We welcome people on our podcast just to talk about their life and to share some wisdom with our listeners. Let's formally introduce our guests.
Yes. Patrick Ryan is
Patrick
your name.
Edward Ryan.
Yes, we've got to get that. I like that.
Patrick Edward Ryan, we're so glad to have you here. And I was motivated to have you here because we have a mutual friend. She's my physical trainer, personal trainer, and she's also a friend and a tennis friend. But she told me she had lunch with you, and she was saying, I have this friend named Patrick who's 90 years old. He goes to the Y and he goes 5 or 6 days a week. And I said, wait a second. He's 90 years old and he goes to the Y 5 or 6 days a week? I can't get my 30-year-old clients to go to the gym one day a week. So I need to talk to this man.
We want to know your secrets and the wisdom. And what, when you were in your 30s or 40s or 50s, what would you have said to yourself today? And what does your today self say to your 30s, 40s, and 50s? We'd like to discover some of that.
All through my life, I was active. When we lived in England, I played tennis, I played cricket, I played ping pong, and I probably played every game there was. So I was very active always. And then when I came over and was drafted, I was sent to Lowry Air Force Base in Denver, Colorado. Okay. It turns out that the Air Force had a soccer team. So I used to play soccer in England. So I said, hey, I got to join this. So I was there for about 6 months. So I played soccer, and it had advantages.
Yeah.
I didn't have to do KP. I got out of things, and you got better food. And so it was good.
Yeah.
And then I was transferred to, Fort Bragg. North Carolina. Mm-hmm. It's not called Fort Bragg anymore, but it's now some name.
Okay. I didn't know that. I thought it was Fort Bragg. Okay.
And it's called Fort Liberty now.
Oh.
Because Fort Bragg was a general.
Yes. Got it.
Yes. I was just having a conversation about this with my father last night.
And this is the time now when the service was segregated.
Right.
You know, there was black bathrooms and white bathrooms and black bars and white bars. And
right.
It was something that I'd never experienced in my life before.
Right. Coming from Ireland and England,
yeah,
that wasn't the case there, right?
So I also played as much sports there as I could, you know. So, and then when I got out in 1960, I guess I didn't do sport for a couple of years. And then I met my wife, who is very super active. She's very fit, and so, and she's 10 years younger. So keeping up with a younger woman was very healthy.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. That's very good motivation.
It really is. But when we joined the Y, you know, you fill in these forms and they want to know why you want to join. And one of the questions they asked you, was it due to your need for a social life? And both of us, no. Social life? We just want to exercise. But it turns out that the social part of the Y is as important as the exercise.
There you go.
You meet a lot of friends and you sort of egg each other on. And
absolutely.
If you miss a class, they want to know, where are you? Are you
okay? That's right.
And so that was an aspect of exercising that I found very strange, because I hadn't thought about it.
Right.
And suddenly here I am. And in most of the classes, I'm the oldest guy. And in a lot of classes, I'm the only guy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah.
So I go to chair yoga, where I think I'm the only guy. There might be one other guy. I go to senior fitness. There might be two other guys. And there's 30, 40 women. I went to aqua fitness this morning.
Mm-hmm.
There was one other guy and 25 ladies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they all know me, and
it's
really,
and they expect to see you.
Yeah, but it's good for your spirit, and you want to go because you feel welcome. You know,
That's community. A community. So, are you? You said you're the oldest guy there. You think
most of the time. Yeah. I think there's one other guy who's 83, but he doesn't come very often.
Okay, well, he's 83. You said.
No, 93.
Oh, 93. He's older than you.
Yeah, he's older than me.
We talked before we started that we've lost a decade here.
Yes.
Right? So, well, maybe you feel 83.
I only feel 60, but don't talk about it.
So you're, how old are you?
90.
Yeah. Okay. So
March 1st, I was 90.
Oh, you just turned.
Well, happy birthday.
Yeah, yes. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. How does that feel to turn 90?
Doesn't feel like anything. My name is just age, just a number.
Just a number.
And mine's unlisted. That's why it's on television.
Yeah, right.
But when we lived in Chicago, my wife and I joined the Y there, and we got into racquetball, and we played a lot of racquetball. And then my wife is Norwegian, and she's a skier, so we did a lot of skiing.
Yeah.
So all my life I've been into some kind of sport.
You've been moving. You've been moving ever since the beach. So when you were a child, were you doing sports as a child as well?
Well, when you say child, when I was in my teens, I guess, I was very active. But bear in mind that we moved to England in 1939.
Okay.
And the war broke out in 1939.
That's right.
So the first several years, I was not, the school was almost non-existent, and sports was non-existent. A lot of food was non-existent.
Right.
We were rationed. You couldn't do this and that. So for the first maybe many years, I didn't play any games, because there really wasn't any organized games to play.
You were just being
bombed every day. And it's funny, because as you notice that I have a stutter.
Oh, I didn't notice a stutter, no.
Most people know that.
Okay.
Anyway, but we were being bombed every day. And then someplace along the line, I realized that I stuttered. Now, the question is, why did I stutter? I had never heard of PTSD,
right.
But it might be a hangover from that.
I imagine.
Or it might be that I'm that I was left-handed and someone made me to be right-handed.
Correct.
I've done various studies to show that I probably am left-handed, but I'm made to be right-handed. Right. And being left-handed has some disadvantages, because when I was in the service, when you go out and learn how to shoot a rifle, the rifles are made for right-handed people.
Of course.
Because you shoot like this, yep, and the shell comes out this way.
Correct.
When you shoot like this, the shell comes out and hits you in the face. So it was very difficult to think.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a right-handed world.
Yeah, it is.
It is. So speaking of, like, you were in London at that
time.
So you were in the middle of...
Yeah.
So that really...
And you had just moved there.
Yeah.
Wow. That's... Yes, I would say probably PTSD, whether it was the study or not, the stutter or not, that can be a terrible psyche in your mind of living through that. Yeah.
And so, how big was your family?
I have two sisters and one brother.
Okay.
But dozens of cousins.
Yes, because your mother was one of 10. Is that what you said? Okay. One of 10. Yes. Are many of them still around, or?
A lot of them live in Long Island.
Oh.
And one of my cousins moved to California, and he had 6 boys.
Wow.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So this identity that you have of someone who's always been active and moving all the time, you've always, whenever you could. So after we get through the war, and you can, then you got back into sports and all of that. I mean, this is a part of who you are. This is your identity. So it's almost like everywhere you went, you looked for opportunities to, but it sounds like you've done almost every, most sports that you could think of.
Yeah. I've been very active.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite sport that you played?
Well, now I'm at 90. I'm not as nimble as I was, and I have 2 knee replacements, and so that limits what I could do. So the sports I do now are senior fitness,
right.
and aqua fitness,
right.
and chair yoga.
Yes. Yes.
But yet that's all movement, and it's keeping you going.
Yeah.
In a beautiful, connected way.
Yeah. And my wife is a Norwegian farmer's daughter, so her childhood was, we were what we call children of the war, because she was born in 1943 and Norway was invaded by the Germans and I was bombed by the Germans, so we grew up not having much and having a different view on life because of what was happening to us at the time, So I always thought that I'd never live very long because I saw so many people die and so many people killed. And but anyway, she likes to cook. And because she's a farmer's daughter, she's all homemade stuff.
Yeah.
So we eat almost no processed food, almost all, I'd say 99% of the bread we eat is homemade.
Yeah.
She makes her own everything, so.
Wow.
We're not big into, and we very rarely eat out. A lot of people eat out a couple of times a week. We eat out maybe once every 6 months or something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And does she like to cook?
She loves it. And I like to cook.
I was going to ask you, do you like to cook? Yes.
I like to cook too.
Yes.
So do you share the kitchen together? Do you cook together? Or is it you're in there or she's in there?
That's the way. She does not like to have me in the kitchen when she's doing something.
Okay.
Right.
So do you clean up when she cooks and she cleans up when you cook? Or
no, she cleans up when both of us cook.
The secret's out.
So you've already named
three,
at least three. We have what we call 5 foundations of health, and you've already named 3 of them. So the first one is nutrition. So you talked about eating real whole foods, cooking.
Yeah.
That's all we talk about is eating real whole foods and playing in the kitchen, getting, really loving to eat real food, not processed. And then movement is our one of our foundations. So of course we've been talking about movement, which is what brought you here because of that. And you talked about connection and community, which is one of our other foundations, which is so important to health, which we're learning now.
It's far more important than I ever dreamt.
Exactly.
It's really important.
Exactly.
It keeps me going because I have a lot of friends now, and it's wonderful to go.
Yeah. Have you heard of the Blue Zones? Have you heard of that book?
No.
And well, maybe you could be in that book. there's a book, I'm forgetting his name.
Dan Buettner.
He wrote a book called The Blue Zones based on different areas all around the world where people are living up in their 90s and 100s. And he wanted to know these pockets. Why? Why there? Why are they living this long? Number one common denominator, because they were in different places all over the world. They didn't share the same cuisine. They didn't share the same movement patterns or whatever it was. It was community and connections. That was the number one reason that they lived as long as they did and as well as they did. And now you're seeing that too. You're saying that that's bigger than you ever imagined being a big deal. So, yeah.
A funny story is that there was this guy at the Y who was bragging about how his wife makes the best spaghetti sauce in the world. He went on and I said, his name was Linford. I said, Linford, I make the best spaghetti sauce in the world. And he said, no, my wife does. And his wife, Anne, walked by and she heard us and said, look, I'll tell you what, why don't you come over to our house and you bring your sauce and we'll have a little test. And two other guys were there and they said, oh, can we come too? So six of us go over there. I bring my sauce, she makes her sauce.
Contest.
And her husband does it, the little pile of this where puts her sauce on one pile and my sauce on the other, and then we eat, we have a test. And then we ask.
Was it a blind test?
No.
No.
Oh, no. No one knew.
No.
Where,
okay,
which
so it was.
Which.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
it was blind.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah. Yes.
So then when we'd eaten, we said, okay, let's take a vote. And I think that the two guys didn't want any one of us to win. So they ended up with a 3-3 draw.
That sounds like a win for everybody, though, ultimately, right?
And what's nice about it is that we have remained friends ever since. And now we have this little spaghetti group, as we call us. And we meet once a month or something, or we eat out, or they'll invite us to their house, or we invite them to our house, and we have this little thing going that just happened because of the Y and me going there.
That's great.
I love that story, and I think that sharing food together, it's such a special way of saying I like you and you're important to me. And I think we've become so siloed in our homes with our remote control, you know, everything that we've isolated ourselves to a degree. And I think that COVID kind of drove us inward for that. I think we're still kind of crawling ourselves out of that time. Yeah. And so this is such a, I love that story. I think we all could learn from that and start making spaghetti friends, or what do you call it? The spaghetti club?
Yeah, group.
Group, spaghetti group. I like that.
Yeah. And we're now firm friends.
Yeah.
And this happened right before the pandemic.
So did you front porch at all together? Like, did you go out on the front porch and meet outside or anything during the pandemic?
No? That's when I joined Jackie's Zoom class.
Oh, right. Yes.
That's when I joined that.
Good for you.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, I'm saying that because a lot of people stopped doing things because they said, oh, I don't do Zoom.
Yeah.
I don't do it.
Yeah.
And I'd have to say, and I'm trying not to be ageist, but I'd say probably the older people were the ones who were kind of rebellious more because it's not familiar. It's not a familiar medium for people. So hearing that you did that and you had the flexibility to do that, and you were like, I'm going to keep moving. I'm going to keep doing it on Zoom.
And as there's a teacher also called Kim. Mm. Kim is one of the senior fitness teachers, and she made lots of of why videos, you know, where, but Jackie's, Kim's class was where she just exercised and there was no music and, and, but she was very good, but it wasn't as interesting as when you, when I joined the Zoom class with Jackie, because she's talking to you and she can see you and you can see her.
And, and she'll comment on your form.
And you have more of a a to and fro between you. You know?
Makes
and,
a difference.
It made a huge difference.
Absolutely.
So just watching a video and exercising was good, but it was not nearly as good as talking to Jackie and looking at Jackie. He was very beautiful. It's nice to look at anyway.
That's right.
You just scored some points.
Yes. It's funny because I, she, of course, I took her Zoom classes too because I was still doing it. And I still do. I do take one of her Zoom classes because it's just easier for me to be to do that. And it's nice, a nice convenience because even though she only lives 10 minutes away, I can just turn on the screen
and there you are.
And then she, and you're right. It's because of the interaction. You know, she was, she does have recorded videos and I've watched a couple of them in exercise, but it's not the same. I really would rather.
I agree.
I'd really rather do that.
I love the class.
Yeah.
And I became sort of friends with all of the other women in that group. And in fact, for my birthday, I think four or five of them took me out for lunch.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's how I heard about you. Yeah. That was the birthday lunch that she was talking about.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it was very nice.
That is very nice. Yeah.
So all of these things are very, you know, I mean, they sound trivial, but to me, they're very important.
Well, I think to your point, we do trivialize some of the things that keep us going, and we forget how movement and connection and nourishing ourselves, we just easily forget because the world is kind of distracting and the world wants to quick fix us and just do this one thing and you'll feel better. And it's, I love that you just said that because it's really a, all of these things are practices that help us still feel good at 90. Right?
Now, one thing you haven't mentioned was alcohol.
Oh.
Oh. Tell us about alcohol.
I have a glass of wine every night.
Ah.
I have a cocktail every night.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
And it works for you.
It works.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. You don't have three cocktails.
Maybe once in a blue moon.
Once in a blue moon, right? There it is. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. It's.
Well, I think there are two schools of thought with food and alcohol and caffeine. There's the school that says this is good and this is bad and you should do this, which is the diet culture that we're trying to forget. We're trying to erase that and say, when you have alcohol, how does it make you feel? And are you okay with that? Because if we demonize something, then we have shame around it.
Yeah.
And so when we're, I enjoy a glass of alcohol with my husband or you with your wife and in social situations, it's much different than doing it in shame or feeling that you shouldn't be doing something. So.
Let me tell you a funny story about this spaghetti group. There's this woman, Anne. She's the same age as my wife. They are both 80. Anne never travels without a little bottle of dry vermouth in a little spray can. So she loves a dry martini.
Mm-hmm.
So when she comes over, she has this little pours in the gin, and that's her martini.
Uh-huh.
But she never goes away without it. She always has this in her bag.
She's prepared.
It's part of her lipstick and her.
Yes, they're essentials.
That's right. It's part of her essentials. Is that a funny thing?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
She does have four spritzes. That's it.
Four.
And that's
That's it.
Yeah.
That's enough dry vermouth.
Right. That's just the perfect amount for her, right? That's exactly right.
Right. Yeah. So one of our other foundation principles is about mindset and how we deal with stress and how we approach life. Do you have any wisdom to share with us or our listeners about what you might share with people?
I'll tell you another funny story. I was working for a railroad in Chicago, and I worked for a guy who was vice president, and he was being considered for being senior vice president. So they sent him away to Harvard Business School for 6 months or something to learn whatever management skills he would need in his new position. And then I took over his spot while he was gone. And I had a staff of 400.
Oh.
And it was a very busy time, and I had to go to all the meetings that he'd normally go to. Well, he came home after about 3 months for a weekend, and he came to the job, but he called me to his office and he said, "Patrick, you've been known to stutter in front of the senior staff." Well, that had an effect on me that was drastic, because now I tried to not stutter in front of the senior staff, which made me stutter even more.
Of course.
So needless to say, when the 6 months was up, he came back, I did not get the promotion. So yeah. I don't know whether that means anything to you guys.
It does.
Well, it does, because someone said that that wasn't okay.
Yeah, and it had a terrible effect on me.
Had a terrible effect on you because it actually had no benefit. It wasn't supportive at all.
No, right. It was terrible.
Right,
terrible,
yeah. Terrible. Yeah. It brought attention to you to be more self-aware and self-conscious about something that you probably were a little bit nervous about anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So that's it shows the how much power we have with words, you know.
That's a great point. It's true. You can really destroy someone with words.
You really can.
Yeah.
Yes. You really can. And at the same time, you can also build people up.
You know, it's funny, Shemin, because there are lots of elderly women in the senior fitness classes, you know, and if you see something about them and you're honest and you're not sort of sucking up to them, if you see someone with nice eyes, you say, "Gosh, you have lovely eyes." Mm-hmm. That really helps them, and and you can see them responding positively.
Oh,
you say, "Got lovely hair," or "Gosh, you look good today." I don't know. And it's so important, because it's so easy to say something nice to somebody.
Absolutely.
And it costs you nothing.
It costs nothing.
And it's a positive thing for both.
Yeah. It's gold to the other person. It feels wonderful.
It does feel wonderful.
Right. And you feel wonderful too by
Absolutely.
Gifting
yeah.
it. You know, it's...
Yes. Yeah.
It's so true. And this is what she was talking about with mindset.
Yeah.
It's these little, like we were saying, these little things that make big differences, where how people talk to us, how we talk to ourselves. You know, a lot of times we beat our own selves up.
We do.
Right. Yeah. And so we're sometimes our own worst enemies when it comes to habits and doing good things for ourselves and nourishing ourselves. Sometimes it's not about what's happening out here. It's that we're not nice to ourselves, or we don't have a good idea of who we are with an identity. Like I was talking about with your identity of someone who's always active. You know, this is a strong, super strong identity that you have. You probably never even think about it. It's just who you are.
Yeah.
But that's guided you your whole life to keep moving and to get you here.
And I am also careful about not gaining weight. I don't want to end up fat old guy, bald and fat. I could be bald, but I don't want bald and fat.
One of my clients said to me once, she was a fat woman, and she came to work with me. And her one reason for working with me, she said, "Do you see fat elderly people?"
Yeah.
And I thought about it. I had never thought about it before. And it's true. You don't often see fat elderly people. Because who knows why? I mean, you can guess why. But the idea is that, you know, it's sometimes you can be fat and be healthy, for sure.
Yeah.
But oftentimes when you're fat, you're not very healthy. And so maybe that's why. And so you're saying that you're very careful about that. Is another reason why you're sitting here.
I got married in Norway in 1971, mm-hmm. and I wore a tuxedo. I can wear the same tuxedo.
There you go. There you go.
52 years later.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing. That is definitely, so that has been an identity for you, that you stay the same weight and that you can...
Well, I wouldn't say I'm the same weight.
Similar.
Okay, close enough that I can get into it.
Right. Yes, close enough you can get into it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, of course, your body at 90 is
it
not going to be...
It moves. Yeah. No, but... Even if you're the same weight, the weight isn't in the same place.
No, that's right. That's correct. That is correct.
We call that gravity, and that happens. Gravity happens. Yes.
Gravity is, we know that scientifically, and we know it in our bodies. We see it in our bodies. It definitely is a thing where things fall as we get older. And it's not a bad thing. It's just what happens.
Yeah, it's just life.
It's just life.
Yeah.
And this is part of another thing that I was thinking about is how, especially here in America, we look at aging as a negative thing. We've been calling it ageism, where people think of being old as not a good thing. We're constantly trying to look younger or pretend to be younger or dress younger or get our faces lifted or whatever else. It's this constant idea of trying to be younger than we are. And perhaps as we get older, we're treated differently as we get older too. Do you come across that? Do you notice that?
I think it's natural for everyone to try to look their best. And what's funny is that women age in a different way than men age. And I think part of it is because women are much more conscious of their beauty than men are. Because you wear so much makeup and you do eyes and ears and whatever. And men don't do as much. But so men tend to age more gracefully than women do, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you feel that's being nasty or not, but I think that women are more conscious of it, I think, than men.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that is definitely society's pressures too. We're trained to care more. We're trained to make sure we have this look. You know, it's a society thing mostly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you're making me wonder if women feel that more, that what I'm talking about, ageism, more than men do, especially when they're older. Because when I asked you that, do you feel that people treat you differently because you're older? Maybe you're not feeling it so much.
No, I mean, when you're riding on the subway and someone said, "Excuse me, sir, do you want to sit here?"
That's a good thing.
That's both a positive and a negative.
Right.
Yes, true. And there is a thing about embracing, you know, in some ways is, we can't do what we could do when we were younger.
Absolutely.
And so when people offer help, saying thank you, I'll take your help, instead of resisting and saying, no, I can do it myself. You know, there's a stubbornness there that, you know, we can let go of because accepting that. Yes, okay, maybe I can't do that as easily as you can. So go ahead, do that.
Yeah.
So as you said before, when I asked you what your favorite sport, where you said you're not doing what you used to do. What was that like? Tell me about, I'm curious also, there's a moment, because here's, like I said, I'm 54, my husband is also 54. And we're in this place in our lives now where we can still do a lot, but we can't do a whole lot. And I'm finding also that men around my age in their 50s are kind of grasping onto the last of what they can do. Do you remember feeling like that at all? Or do you remember that transition from going to playing sports and being active in that way into moving more towards the gym and doing what you're doing now?
If it happened, it happened so gradually that I didn't really notice it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just things happen and you deal with it. You know, things you can do, you do, and things you can't do. And things you can't do, there's no good worrying about it. It's done. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's a mindset thing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That if you don't put a lot of attention and worry, well, I can't do that, but I can do this.
Yeah.
And that's a definitely an attitude and a mindset that can keep us in a better place.
I'll tell another story. I retired in 1999, I think it was, and I was worried about when I retired, what would I do?
Mm-hmm.
I had a very high pressure job at the New York Stock Exchange, and I was glad to retire because I didn't have all of that pressure.
Right.
And my wife said, okay, now I've got so many things that I want you to do. I want a cabinet here. I want bookshelves here. I need a table here. So for years, I just built things.
Ah.
I probably have built maybe 60% of the furniture in the house. And then one day, I was doing something and I cut the ends off my fingers.
Ooh. Oh, look at that. I see that.
That had another marked effect. Now I couldn't do all the things I used to do because the hand that I was too clumsy to do it. So I had to now find other things to do.
What was that like for you to lose that gift that you had?
I used to do a lot of carving, you know. And another funny story is my wife signed the two of us up for carving school. There was a school in Vermont where you would go for a week,
mm-hmm.
and you'd work from 9 a.m. till 9 p.m.
Wow.
carving and stuff, and it was really great. But she signed us up because she felt that she would be better at it than I was, because she felt she had more patience than I did.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it turns out I was much better.
Because of the patience.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And she's very, very tentative. You know, I'll get in and do it, but she's very tentative. So,
interesting.
So funny. So she was determined that, and here's another thing. I never compete with her on anything because I don't want to be better than her on things that she wants to excel in. So I never cook her favorite dishes.
Ah. You know,
and she never cooks my favorite dishes.
There you go.
Do you think that's part of the success of your, if it is successful, and I think
it is successful.
It is since you are still married.
We do the New York Times crossword puzzle every day. On Monday, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, we do it separately. On Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we sit side by side and do it. It turns out that she's much better at it than I am.
Ah, okay.
One of my failings is I'm a terrible speller. Mm. She's a fantastic speller. And I know things that she doesn't know, and she knows things that I don't know, and our two backgrounds sort of mesh. But we do it together every day.
Nice. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's fun to do it together, you know.
It's
a kind of a bonding process that reinforces whatever it is that's happening.
Right. Yes. Right. Yeah. I'm wondering if she, when you retired, if she purposely had that plan for you to do all.
I think so. She didn't want me hanging around the house.
Right.
She said, what am I going to do with him?
That's right. So she orchestrated your transition from being super busy at work to being super busy at home. So before you knew it, you're like, oh, here I am. And that can be a really hard transition for a lot of people from retirement.
A lot of people, their job defines them.
Oh, of course.
And that's terrible. Because now when you lose your job, who are you?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So what advice would you give to someone who...
Have a hobby.
Have a hobby, right, yeah.
Have a hobby, something that you like doing that's different from what you worked at.
Okay.
I'm an engineer and I did a lot of logic design. Carving is completely different.
Yeah, right. So did you get into that after you retired, or were you into that before you retired then it became your...
I think part of it is the fact that Emily signed us up for this carving course. And that's when I was still working.
Mm.
So when I finished work, I now had this carving that I was good at and I liked. Yeah. You know?
Yes.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. But it's important to have a hobby. I know so many people, so many men who have died young after they retired.
Mm-hmm. It's important to have a hobby.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is different from your job because
absolutely,
and I mean it sincerely. I know many people who are lost when they retire because they have their job gave them meaning and stuff, and when they lose that,
right, their job was everything they knew about themselves. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I agree. I think that's we're finding that because we're at the age now where a lot of people are starting to retire.
Have you got any hobbies?
Yes, many.
Tell me a couple. Tell me a couple. What's your favorite hobby?
Gardening.
Gardening?
Yes.
Okay. What else? Give me another one.
I sail. I volunteer.
You sail?
I do.
Oh, yes. God. I've sailed all over the world.
All over the world.
I've sailed in Australia, Fiji,
wow.
New Zealand, Tonga.
Oh.
And all over the British Virgin Islands, Spanish Virgin Islands, the Spice Islands.
Is this on your own boat?
No.
It's on cruise boats and
we would do what's known as bare boat sailing.
Yes.
Okay. We would charter a boat.
Yes.
Say in Fiji.
Uh huh.
We'd fly out there. You would fill in forms and say, I want so many loaves of bread, so many things of milk, so this. And when you got there, it would be waiting for you on the dock, and then you'd load it away yourself. The reason is that you had to put it away yourself because you didn't know where to find it.
That's right.
That's a good point. So you had to do it because if someone else does it,
right.
Where the hell is that?
Where is it? Right.
And then we would sail all over and come back.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I bet.
And my wife didn't really like it much.
Oh.
But what she actually didn't like it, and we actually took a week sailing course in Tortola in the British Virgin Islands. And at the end of the week, she wasn't any better sailor, but she wasn't afraid. Because, you know, when you're sailing and the boat heels over, you think you're going to go under. Things happen.
Yeah.
So at the end of a week, she was quite comfortable. And she could great at pulling ropes and doing that, but don't ask her to take the helm or do anything.
Right. Well, my dad and I sometimes wrestle for the helm. So.
And what size boat?
Oh, it's a little 16-foot Bullseye. So it doesn't have a motor.
Yeah.
It's got a fixed keel, so it's really heavy boat, a self-tending jib, and it's beautiful, beautiful little boat. It fits four very comfortably, and it's got teak, and it got beat up in Sandy, but now it has more character, and it's a Herrschaft design. It's a beautiful boat. Yeah, it's from the... I think it was made in the 50s, so.
We would sell more than the 44 or 50 foot boats.
You were in the open water.
But those big boats are easier to sail than the little boats.
Yeah, we only go out for an hour and a half or two. You were going for weeks, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that's two of your hobbies. What's your two hobbies?
Well, tennis is one of my biggest hobbies.
Oh, good.
Yes, I like to knit. And I like to bake.
Oh, good. That's great hobby. I love those.
I also like to garden. So
yeah. That's wonderful.
Yeah. And I'm always open to new things. I'm always trying to find new things to do. You know, it's fun to do whatever comes across. I'm like to take classes and to do different things. So yeah, I think that's one of our tenets, I'd say, is curiosity.
Yes.
And it sounds like you also have that as a big part of who you are, as being curious.
Well, I love to travel.
Yes.
My wife being from Norway, and has family over there. We go to Norway every year. Mm-hmm. We've gone there for as long as we've been married almost, and that. But where my sister-in-law lives is a small valley. And if you like cows and sheep, it's great. But there's nothing to do there except walk or pick mushrooms or something. So I leave my wife there with her sister, and I go off. I've been to Sicily, I climbed Mount Etna. I've climbed, what's that big volcano in Germany? Vesuvius, Pompeii. I've traveled to all of those places.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do you have have you kept your passports? Do you have all your passports?
I've got two passports. I've got an Irish passport and a US passport.
So are you traveling this year? Have you traveled this year?
We will go to Norway every year.
Every year, okay.
I have an English niece that lives in Cornwall. Mm-hmm. And it's in a beautiful area with tiny village with one, all full of one-way streets. And she goes in and swims in the Atlantic every day.
Wow.
All year round.
Wow.
365 days a year she goes in.
That's that builds character. I give her a lot of credit.
And she likes to travel with me. So, you know.
She goes with you.
Yeah, she goes with me.
There you go.
And she's much younger than I am. Of course, she's 60 and I'm 90. But we get along very well.
And because you're eating so well and you're moving a lot and you're in community with people and you have a great mindset, you are...
And she's a vegetarian.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
So when I go away with her, I eat a lot of vegetables.
So there's one more of our five foundations that we haven't spoken about, and it's sleep. And do you have a pattern for sleep that is...
I have no problem sleeping at all.
Isn't that beautiful?
Have you always been like that?
Well, I was in the Air Force for 4 years.
Right.
And when you got up, you made your bed. You couldn't get back in it till at night. But many times, they'd wake you up in the middle of the night to do stupid things. So I was always tired. So I could go in, get under my, lay on the floor under the bed, and I'd sleep for as long as I could. And then I'd woke up and I'd have to do other things. So I've carried that habit of being able to sleep very quickly.
Oh, that's a gift.
That's a gift.
Yeah.
I do have a family story that's of myself actually falling asleep on a horse, going up a mountain with all my cousins. And my uncle led us up into the mountain and when he had a dude ranch in Wyoming, and I actually fell asleep on the horse. I did not fall off. I woke up, but it's a, I'm a good catnapper too.
I used to ride a lot too. Another funny story. We were not married at this time, and we were both, Emily and I were going to Ireland to see some friends, and there's a place called the Gap of Dunloe, where you ride a horse up there and you look at the gap, it's all beautiful, very scenic, and you come back down again. Well, these horses don't like being ridden, and so when you put a saddle on, the horse will blow itself up to so when you cinch it, it lets go and it's loose. So I'm showing off to my wife, get on the horse. And I get the horse running, and I do a turn. The saddle, the saddle, and me just roll over.
Oh no!
Oh no!
I fall on my sacrum, and
but
I got up, straightened the saddle up, got back on. But she sneered at my horsemanship.
Yes, you were trying to show off.
Yeah.
You learned your lesson about always kicking them in the ribs so they go like this, right?
Yeah.
So you can sleep anywhere. That's a gift.
Yeah, I can do that.
I think my father learned that in the service as well.
Yeah.
He can sleep anywhere, and he can,
They make you do all kinds of stupid things in the odd hours, you know.
He also still makes his bed every day. Do you as well? No. You said forget that.
Well, sometimes when I go up to bed and my wife hasn't made the beds, I will make the beds.
Okay. So do you have a routine about sleep? Do you go to bed at the same time every night and wake up at the same time every morning?
When I worked, I used to get up about 6:15 or something like that. And so now I get up about 7. Mm-hmm. But I wake up the same time every day.
Right.
Emily gets up about 6:30. Okay. I get up later.
A little bit later.
Yeah.
And you go to bed around the same time every night?
No. I go to bed about 9:30. She goes to bed about 10.
Mm. Okay.
And likes to read in bed. Mm-hmm. I don't like to read in bed.
And you can just go right to sleep. You don't need to.
I get in and I'm out.
Beautiful thing.
Yes.
She comes up, reads, and I don't even know that she's got the light on and reading.
Yeah.
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 That's a gift.
So she sleeps less than you do because she goes up later and wakes up earlier.
Yeah.
Yes.
She says women need less sleep than men.
Perhaps. I don't know if that's true.
Well, she needs less sleep than you.
Right.
That's your study of two.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And you said you have a son. Is that right?
Yeah. I got two sons and one daughter.
Oh, and one daughter. Okay. Okay. Where are they?
My youngest son is Finn.
Okay.
And lives in Middletown.
Oh, here. Okay.
My daughter is Eileen, and she lives in South Jersey.
Okay.
My oldest son is Tim, and he lives in Red Bank.
Okay. All right. So you have both your sons here.
Yeah.
And your daughter's not too far.
Yeah.
That's nice. And I imagine you probably also have grandchildren.
I got 3 grandchildren.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're local too?
No. Actually, both my sons have no children.
Oh, okay.
My daughter has 3.
Okay. Yes.
I'm expecting when you see them, it makes you feel younger, or do they just exhaust you?
Well, they're probably grown by now, I imagine.
Well, when you can drag them away from their phone.
Yes.
Yes.
It amazes me how much time people spend on their phone. They will come in and get up. I had 6 cousins from Ireland come over. There's no sooner come into the house, they sat around the table, and they all got out their phones.
Yes. Yep.
It was incredible.
Yes.
It's a very interesting study of our society, yeah, how we're so attached
to their phones.
Yeah. That generation is very, very different because they grew up this way.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's mm-hmm. it's interesting to see it. That's my children. They're in their 20s. And so
you have children too?
I have children. Wow. And they're in their 20s. So they also have their phones around a lot of the time. They're a little bit more conscious about it, I think, just because of
as you are.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah. And so my son, it's much better. He'll call me instead of texting. He'll call, which is nice. So but yes, wherever we go, this generation, and even a little bit older, it's the phone is a constant. It's a constant, and it's an interesting. I'm curious to see where this goes. You know, to see how as they get older, what's going to happen too.
Yeah. You have children too?
No, I've got fur babies.
Fur babies.
I've got cats.
Cats.
Yes.
Oh.
No children.
No children. Cats are easier.
Yes. They are.
We had 2 cats.
Okay.
It's a classic thing. Friends come and they've got this 2 cats. We've got 3 young children. And they say, now, if you don't want them, we can take them back. Once our children had seen these 2 cats, there is no way that they're giving them up. And the cats lived for 19 years.
Of course, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they got a lot of, one of them had, got hit by a car, and we had to put his leg in a cast. And one got epilepsy, and we had to take him. He had to get drugs and
right.
But they were so good for the children.
Yes. You know,
the children loved them. The cats loved them.
Yes.
It was a lovely experience.
Yes.
But we said once they died.
You're done.
We're done.
Well, you travel too much.
Traveling.
Yeah, you travel. Yeah. Yes. Take care of animals.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
That's right. So is there any other drops of wisdom or any other things that come to mind about how you live? So you live so well, and it's all the work that you've done before now to get to where you are now, to be so vibrant and to, I mean, like you said, you don't care. When I asked you about what it's like to be 90, you're like, that doesn't mean anything to me, really.
Well, one of the things that the yoga teacher does at the end of the class is, one of the things she says is, let go any grudges you have, let go anything that is not positive and that is hurting you. So I actually try to not bear grudges and to forgive people, and hopefully they'll forgive me too. But, you know, but it's important to realize that people are human, you know, and we all make mistakes, and we all need a second chance. And as I said, it's so easy to compliment someone if the compliment is sincere, mm-hmm. and most is received with great glee if you are sincere and you mean it, and it's something that they value. Like, you know, if you've got beautiful eyes and you tell them, that makes them feel good, you know, and it's good.
Absolutely. Being kind, you know, it's just, we all need to be kind and to feel kindness.
I went to a store. I was getting something framed, and I went to one of these box stores and I had it framed, and they did a fantastic job. So when the woman brought it to me, I said, who's your manager? She said, why? I said, I just like to speak to her. So I said, you know, this woman here did a great job, and she's very nice. But when I first asked her, she was apprehensive that I would. So one of my vows was, when someone does something nice for you, tell them.
Yeah.
You know, don't just keep it in and say, to yourself, tell them. Or even let their managers know they've done, you know, they got a good employee that they should look after and cherish.
Right. Yes. Yep. That's very true. Like we just said, words are so powerful, and we all have them.
But we are so not used to saying sincerely thank you, mm-hmm. you know. Oh, thank you. Have a nice day. But it doesn't mean anything, you know?
Right. But when it does mean something, it means a lot.
Say it from the heart.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
On purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being on our podcast.
Okay. We're done?
We are done.
Thanks for tuning in to Navigating Nourishment. When listeners take a few seconds to subscribe and leave us a review, it really helps our podcast grow and to create more clarity around personal well-being.
To get more rich content and to become part of our exclusive podcast community, join our private Navigating Nourishment Facebook group. Thanks again so much for listening. Stay curious, keep learning, and keep exploring.